Welcome to the Voices of Women Physicians podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Tatiana Resnik, a practicing physician and a certified life coach. You will hear about inspirational journeys and practical tips from amazing women physician experts, as well as effective coaching and steps in your process. Welcome everyone to this episode of Voices of Women Physicians podcast. I'm so happy to have here today with us Dr. Valerie Kacho. She's integrative sleep medicine physician and women's sleep expert. And we will talk today about sleep. Welcome, Dr. Kacho. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm a mother, daughter of a cardiologist, and my dad wanted me to go into cardiology, but I said, nope, I like to sleep, and I'd rather have a different lifestyle because he did intervention, and there would be days when I was little where I didn't really see him much because he was always at work, and in that time, I guess specific cardiologists did intervention, so he was gone a lot, and he actually has a friend who is a sleep doctor, and I heard him give a lecture, and it was really cool because I think a lot of people don't know about sleep medicine, that it's its own field, and so I was drawn to help adults. So I went into internal medicine. And then after that, I did a year fellowship in sleep medicine. And I've always been more interested in preventive, holistic lifestyle care. And so I did the online program through University of Arizona on integrative medicine. And sometimes people ask, well, what is integrative medicine? And the best way I like to describe it is all the things that you didn't learn in med school that can help someone heal. So it can bring in whole health systems like Ayurvedic medicine, Chinese medicine, energy medicine. And the way I use it for my practice is really the folks who have a lot of difficulty sleeping, insomnia. And I'm trained in clinical hypnotherapy. So I think that's really cool to have another tool. And then a lot of different mind-body therapies like breathing exercises and things like that. So it's really fun to be able to incorporate the integrative side to traditional Western sleep medicine, where a lot of times what I do is roll in or roll out sleep apnea and put patients on CPAP machines.
This is so helpful and it is so necessary. So many people really need it. It's wonderful you're doing it.
Oh, thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about sleep. So sleep in menopause, this is especially interesting topic because many women suffer from lack of sleep, lack of good sleep. So what would you recommend? Let's start with this one.
Yeah, great question, Dr. Resnik. And I always like to get down to the cause. And the way I approach someone who has difficulty sleeping through perimenopause, menopause, midlife, you break it down to different categories. And so some of the different categories I like to think about are mind, body, and soul. Do you have a hard time either falling asleep or staying asleep because you're really worried? Maybe you have ruminating thoughts. Sometimes anxiety and depression can be a new diagnosis as you go through this hormonal change. Or sometimes you may have had it already in the past and now it's just really amplified as your hormones are changing, as you're getting older, as all these things are happening to your body and they're really uncomfortable and you may not understand or like what's happening. So that's something to consider. The body part, what's physically going in your body? Certainly hot flashes. If a woman has hot flashes, that wakes them up. And sometimes you don't know that you could be having obstructive sleep apnea, snoring, gasping, or choking. Some of the literature shows that up to 40% of women don't have these classic symptoms. And so they don't know to talk to their doctor about getting a sleep study. So what do they present with? Well, insomnia, either difficulty staying asleep, typically not difficulty falling asleep. That's more of the ruminating thoughts. Other things they can have is headaches in the morning, mood instability, and those can be their symptoms, and even just plain old fatigue. I was reading a research study recently that talked about the Epworth sleepiness scale, which is a common sleepiness scale we use in sleep medicine, and maybe some primary care docs use it as well to gauge how likely someone is to fall asleep in a set of different scenarios. And guess what? They say that's actually not validated in women. I think women are just this amazing being that just keeps going and going and going. We don't allow ourselves to stop and actually fall asleep in certain situations because we have to take care of everyone else, including us. And I think sometimes that also plays a role into our sleep and our ability maybe to not sleep well is because we are super givers. We're taking care of everyone else. As we get older, sometimes we get stuck in that sandwich generation, right? Our parents are getting old and maybe they need help with some of their doctor's visits or arranging things at their house. And maybe we still have young kids. If we had our kids later, if we're physicians or professionals, or maybe our kids are going to college, but they still need us and we're working and we're also trying to manage a household. So just the societal expectations around that on top of hormonal changes, which can be scary for a lot of people.
Yes, this is so important. And what are the holistic ways to help with sleep, especially during perimenopause and menopause?
Yeah, so I think really from a holistic standpoint, one of the biggest things that I learned through my fellowship is partnering with a patient, which sort of sounds silly, like maybe it's not as focused in medical school. And I went to medical school, goodness, over 15 years ago now. And I think back then we talked a lot about not as much patient-centered care, more of, okay, these are the symptoms a patient's presenting with. We're going to order the appropriate tests and then treat them. And they're supposed to follow and do what we say. So a little bit of a dictatorship. Whereas when I talk to a person, and now it's like, well, what's bothering you the most about your sleep? What are your top three primary concerns? And then we really hone in. And sometimes if someone doesn't really know, I like to ask them the magic wand question. If I was your fairy godmother for sleep and I could fix your sleep right away, what would that look like? And so that really helps because sometimes what I think is probably more important, like ruling out sleep apnea, maybe it's not. I've had some women who really are in the phase in their life where they're maybe feeling like their career is stale, like they've plateaued, they've been in the same job for 30, 40 years. They're thinking about either retiring or quitting or starting a new business. And sometimes that's unsettling in their mind. And so there's really no pill for that. A lot of times, too, I see some older women who are a little bit lonely. Maybe their spouse is retired. And now that they were used to being with that person for like 40, 50 years, and they're not there anymore. And they just don't know how to deal with that. And so loneliness is something that I also talk about. And I'm actually not a psychologist, but a lot of what I do in my holistic practice is really coming down to peeling back the layers of the onion per se. What does someone really value and how does that play a role in their sleep health? So we take a look at sleep as an important part for your health, like your nutrition, like your movement and your exercise, like your brain health, because it encompasses so many different parts of your mind, body, and soul. And so that's how I like to provide a holistic approach to someone who comes and sees me.
This is great approach, really. It's really helpful. And if you think about various modalities like yoga, therapeutic massage, ear acupuncture, exercise, and such, what is their role in treatment of insomnia, especially during menopause?
Yeah, I like that you brought up so many different modalities, right? So mind-body practices, I basically think of them as different forms of meditation that can help slow down that sympathetic, right? That fight, flight, or freeze, and then increase the parasympathetic or the relaxation response. I heard this on a different podcast, and they were talking about, can you park a car going 70 miles an hour, right? I think as busy women, we're so used to going from one thing to the next. I mean, like today, I had a bunch of patients. I actually didn't book myself a lunch because I typically don't do work on Mondays, and I'm like, what am I doing? And so I'm just going and going and going. And then I'm just like, wait a second. At night, we hit our head on the pillow and we're expected to go to sleep right away, but our brain is still going. We haven't had time to downshift, to put the brakes, to slow down. And those are what yoga, meditation, therapeutic massage can do, acupuncture. It gives us that time and space. Sometimes I call it hitting that Control-Alt-Delete button or pause, right? Let your nervous system slow down. And it's just like physical exercise. Sometimes patients ask, well, what's the best exercise to lose weight? And it's like, what's the best exercise to relax? And really, what it comes down to is the one that resonates with you and actually the one that you'll do. Because if you're not a person that's going to sign up for going to a yoga studio, but you can hit play on a YouTube meditation that's 2 minutes long, that's perfectly fine. So, finding an exercise that you can do, and ideally, if you do it on a regular basis, because you're putting in the reps for your relaxation part of your brain, it just makes it so much easier when you are going to want to fall asleep and you're ready to fall asleep that you're already downshifting and you're slowing down the car, the motor of the car, the motor of your brain.
This is a great approach, yes, especially to individualize the treatment plan. And from your experience, what would you say were the three most effective interventions?
Oh, okay. So we're still talking about someone going through perimenopause and menopause. Okay. I would say figure out what's bothering you the most, going back to if I can wave that magic wand and improve your sleep. Sometimes it's finding out, well, a lot of us have difficulty falling asleep and staying asleep because a treatment actually could be different for either. So again, if you have a difficult time falling asleep, is it because your brain's going and going? Do you have anxiety? Do you have pain? Do you have restless leg syndrome? And figuring out how to treat that. So I would say maybe delineate between do you have a hard time falling asleep or staying asleep? And then figure out how much sleep you in fact need. And I think that's what's really important because we're habituated or acculturated that you're supposed to get 8 hours of sleep. And I probably remember that's back from when our parents are teaching us, stay in your bed, sleep 8 hours, and then when it's sunshine, then you get out and you start your day. But do we in fact need that 8 hours? So I reviewed a study not too long ago done in Canada, and they actually looked at over 4 million people across the world in over 30 countries. And the average sleep time most people were having was actually closer to 7 rather than 8. And then they looked at 14 different health outcomes. And so as long as you were getting 7, that was probably pretty good. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine, the National Sleep Foundation recommends somewhere between 7 to 9. But I would say figure out how much sleep you need to feel good, right? Going back to the car analogy, we all drive cars, right? If you have a gas car, how much fuel do you need in your tank to go from A to B? And my thing, I always like, if you're going to have a lazy weekend, it's a Sunday, you're just going to do some errands or stay at home, could you get by on less versus a busy work week where you have many meetings or a lot of patients, a full schedule? Probably want to have your tank as full as possible. Because another thing that I would say, maybe my number third, is no one's a perfect sleeper 100% of the time. I myself, knowing all I know about sleep, still do enjoy to watch a really good show on Netflix. And sometimes the only time I can really do this is on a Friday night or Saturday night when all the kids are sleeping. I've done all my notes and things are tucked in, and I just allow myself maybe another extra hour or two of just cutting away from my sleep, but really just having some time to enjoy myself and turn my brain off and watch some like mind-numbing, entertaining shows.
Yes. If you think about just specifically for longer sleep, what would you say should we focus on? What's helpful for that?
Yeah, I would say for that is go to bed when you're tired. I know this sounds really silly and maybe a little bit simplified, because oftentimes we don't really know when our clock is ready. So sleep is based on 3 main things. The first is our homeostatic rhythm, or our sleep drive. And all that means is the longer you're awake, the sleepier you get. And certainly for folks who have insomnia, we don't recommend them napping too late in the day, because as you nap, that relieves that pressure. And then you're not as tired when you're ready to go to bed. So that's one. The second part that controls sleep is our circadian rhythm. And this is something that we've heard of in terms of get off on your screens before your bedtime and then go for a morning walk, because that helps regulate your clock. But really, to understand our clock is that when are you ready to go to sleep? So the way it shows up is that I have some patients that wake up really, really early, 4 or 5 o'clock. I think that's early for me because I'm a little bit more of a 7 o'clock waker up, but they try to go to sleep at 8 o'clock to make sure they get all their hours at 8 p.m. And then on the weekends, guess what? They're not sleeping until 11 or 12. And so between 8 p.m. and 11 or 12, they're tossing and turning. Maybe they've tried some sleeping pills and they just can't sleep. And it's really because your clock isn't quite ready to go to sleep. And so that's a key thing. And sometimes we don't realize this, we don't know this, because maybe everyone in our family's like this, because there's a genetic component to our circadian rhythms. And we've tried a bunch of sleep hygiene. We avoid caffeine, we avoid alcohol. But the tools are actually to control your clock are light, darkness, and melatonin. So getting off of the screens at night an hour before your bedtime, maybe an hour and a half, but really getting that morning sunlight. The more sunlight you can get in the morning, and if you live in an area like the Pacific Northwest, or maybe that's not too sunny, you actually can get a light box. Because some of us are really stuck in buildings where we don't have access to sunshine. A lot of times sleep medicine departments are in the basement. So if you're in the basement, it's actually really bad for your circadian rhythm, right? Think of it like elderly folks in nursing home, right? They sleep during the daytime, they're up at night, and then we give them medications to help put them down. But really, it's like their clock, their eyeballs, their retinas aren't receiving that signal of when it's time to be awake and when it's time to be asleep. So if you can go outside, good. If you can get a bright light shining on your eyes, I have a little light here that I use for filming, but also it shines bright light. And I notice when I use it more, I can sleep a little bit earlier, and it helps reset my clock. So that's really important for folks who have a hard time falling asleep from more of a circadian rhythm issue. And then the third component is your hyperarousal state, how fast or how slow your brain waves are going. And that's when it goes to the ruminating thoughts. So if you know you're sleepy, you know that you're ready because you're looking out for those cues, you're yawning, your eyes are getting heavy, but now you can't sleep even though your body's ready because your brain keeps going and going. That's when I try to recommend the mind-body tools. Where can you focus on deep breathing? Can you focus on going into your senses? What are your thoughts in and around sleep? And that can help lower that hyperarousal state to help you go to sleep. Because really what sleep, from really more of a technical standpoint, when we do an EEG, your brain waves are slowing down. So again, right, the car analogy, how do we get your brain waves to slow down? And then that will really in turn lead to better sleep.
Yes, it is helpful. And also meditation, like various types of meditation. Even there are some apps like Insight Timer or Calm, which helps. I recommend to my coaching clients when they have difficulty relaxing and difficulty with stress.
For sure. Those are so helpful. Yeah.
This concludes the first part of our interview. And next week, we will listen to the second part. Stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed it or found it helpful, please subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. Have any topics you'd like covered? Send me an email at joyfulsuccessliving@gmail.com. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to connect at Joyful Success Living. Have an amazing week. See you next time. The Voices of Women Physicians podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not provide any medical, financial, tax, legal, or psychological services or advice. You are responsible for your own well-being, decisions, and results. Dr. Resnick is a practicing physician, but Voices of Women Physicians podcast is not reflective of the opinion of her employer. You should always contact a professional if you have any specific questions about your unique situation.